Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Different Strokes for Different Folks, to find common ground and take it to the next level with David Clark here on Blog Talk Radio. Each week, the show will encourage you to keep an open mind and prepare to open the door to new understandings. We will have an exciting array of diverse guests who will point up the fact that we are all spiritual beings having a human experience. Now your host, David Clark.
Welcome to Different Strokes for Different Folks, where we will indeed be finding common ground and taking it to the max level. I'm your host, David Clark. I'm a spiritual adventurer, and I suggest you become the same. When you keep an open mind, not only will you open the door to new understandings, but you'll come to see that despite our seeming differences, we're all basically the same. This way, you can see where you can find common ground so that you can relate rather than compare yourself to others. Now, tonight, it's my pleasure to bring back Dean A. Roberts. He was born in 1939. He tells his story very simply and short and sweet. He was expelled from school in 1956 and joined the Navy in 1957. Following that, he spent the next 40 years having two kids, three wives, and building and operating a wildly successful business, building and selling custom dollhouses. His interests include reading, writing, traveling, staying fit, learning how to control his head, and playing a lot of poker. His current plan is to write and help people see and actualize the many possibilities of life. And so let me welcome Dean. Dean, how are you tonight?
All's well here.
Great. I love hearing that. And I know that when you say that, you mean it.
Yeah, I couldn't ask for anything more.
The one thing I like about you is that you have such a positive attitude toward life and such a zest for it. And we're going to be talking a little bit about how you've come to that particular frame of mind. But I'm wondering if you can tell me what I'm losing my train of thought here, Dean. We were going to talk about gratitude, among other things, tonight. Why don't we start off there, and maybe you could tell me what gratitude does for you.
The key to a good life, because when people spend, we create our world with our thoughts. There's our reactions are really the world that we live in, and most of the time we're putting some sort of interpretation on what's happening. And if you realize, if you take the time to physically, I sometimes go through a whole list of things. I really like having indoor water and having heat in the house. And then if you go on to the food supply and the ability to communicate with people and reach out into the world and a warm bed and great pets and a fantastic wife. And I just run through that. And I just feel grateful just about, I call it now, this last actually few weeks, I brought it up even a level from that. And I've been trying to, and when I think of the word gratitude, I think of gleeful gratitude, because it's, I feel like I almost got away with something. It's such an incredible experience that I'm having that I reflect on the times when I was depressed and angry, and I feel such a gleeful gratitude that I was able to work my way out of that.
Well, I like that word, gleeful gratitude, because to me that embodies what gratitude is all about. To me, gratitude takes me to a place of joy and a sense of well-being. And it's one thing for me to be able to count my blessings, but to really be able to feel in my heart and soul what that means to me, that to me, is that what the glee is that you're talking about?
Well put. Yes, that's exactly what I was saying. That this just, you know, how did this happen? I have no idea. I'm here in this mystery, and it's everything's going so good. So that's yes, gleeful gratitude.
I love it. I'm going to remember that. By the way, Dean has written a few books, and he was gracious enough to send me copies of them. And I'm going to let you folks know the titles of those books. They're all inspirational. They have a lot of Dean's philosophies. He's crafted dozens and dozens of really cute and meaningful poems. Let's see. I'm not sure which one came first, Dean. Maybe you could tell me.
The what do you mean, the poetry?
Which of the books came first? Was it "I'll Fix My Head Before I'm Dead"?
Yeah, definitely. That was Go ahead.
No. You go ahead and say what you're going to say.
Oh, it's a short biography about 12 or 15 pages about my life, and the rest of it are just excerpts from journals that I kept. I sold my business to my son in 96, and I bought a small travel trailer, and I spent a couple of years living in different parts of the country. And the rest of the book is pretty much excerpts from that period of time.
And then you have "Flowers in the Barnyard," which says a few flowers of wisdom mixed in with a lot of bullshit. I love that. And "Pick It Up, Put It Back, Write It Down, Do It Now," and some thoughts about my life on planet Earth. That's the third book. And I'm going to ask Dean tonight to read some excerpts from some of those books, from all of those books. But let's talk a little bit about your history before we go any farther. You've built a successful business, and your son has that now. You want to talk a little bit about how you got going in the business of building dollhouses?
It's a kind of a nice story. Just before we start, though, I mentioned that all three of those books are available free at DeanAroberts.com. That my father and mother were in the steel wool die making business. My father worked by himself, and my mother kept the books. And I got started in that after I got out of the Navy, and I went to two or three other tribes, and I finally kept coming back working with them. And then around 74, they retired, and I got active in, instead of making steel wool dies, and die cutting products for other manufacturers, a lamp company, an album company, and a whole variety of different die cut materials. And a friend of mine, I started making a few birdhouses. My father designed die cut plywood birdhouses. And we had very modest success with that because it wasn't much of a line, and they were very cheap. So a friend of mine designed a dollhouse. He was an architect, and he drew a simple dollhouse up and sent some samples to me. And after a while, we got around to making a sample. I said, "Oh wow, dollhouses!" And I went to a trade show in Dallas, and it was a hit. We sold some birdhouses that we made, but we sold a lot of dollhouses. And I came back with a whole excitement about being a manufacturing dollhouses. And that was 5 years later. We were doing trade shows all over the world and doing, we were up to $3.5 million. It was like a rush. And we finally peaked out at a high point of about 4.2.
Wow. So that must have been a rush.
And anybody that's interested in it, they could see the whole line at greenleafdollhouses.com. My son has been done well with the web end of the business, so you can go through the whole site pretty easily, and they have a gallery of satisfied Greenleaf customers. I think he said something about 40,000 pictures of different completed houses that people have posted up over the years.
Wow.
And yeah, it was a rush. I was very, very, very lucky. And, you know, so much of the success is fortune presents the opportunity, and then if you got the goods, you can move into it or overlook it, which is probably what I did more than I actualized opportunities.
Well, you were talking to me about how you thought that the best way to approach everything in life was as an opportunity. I'd be interested in hearing you talk a little bit about that philosophy.
It's, I would say, an opportunity, and what I use for myself when the dog's whining is that he wants to eat 15 minutes early and he just won't let up. I say this is an opportunity to retrain myself to absolutely not want to have the world one iota different than it is. So if I come on some situation that's unpleasant, or I don't want to do it, or something that I would before get maybe angry or depressed or upset about, I say, okay, this is it. I can get more resilient. I can work on my program. It's like taking a cold shower, you know. There's a part of me that when I reach up to turn the cold water on, that it's just, well, can't believe you're going to do that again. But you build resilience, and you can't. And it's a dynamic skill or ability or way of being, because if you let up on that, you can, in one step, you can turn around and start going in the wrong direction. So I think that it's a dynamic facility that you can bring up in any part of life and treat it as an opportunity and be grateful for it.
Well, there we go. Gratitude again. I love it. You know, the other thing that I thought was interesting that I heard from a life coach was how to look at everything as a learning opportunity. And in essence, that's what you were saying. And I tend to sometimes forget, when I get caught up in my own shit, that life is filled with choices, a rich a kaleidoscope of choices, and that I can shape my own destiny by grabbing whatever opportunities there are that come along. And there's nothing better than sharing those opportunities with other people. I just love that.
Yes, that's what I want to do with the rest of my life, help people see the mystery and the possibility that we're surrounded by.
Well, that's what you're doing tonight, and I think that's great. How do you see yourself serving in that role, Dean?
Well, I'd like to get a lot of people reading my books. That's why I want to give them away. Another possibility would be a lot more books. I've got titles for about 60 different books that I'd like to write, and some of them a little bit underway. Amazon has created this situation where you can anybody can publish a book. It's simple and it's cheap. I mean, these books that I have published, the ones I sent you, it's $2.15 a piece. Buy six, buy 100. It's opened the door for anybody that has some ideas on anything, and it could just be how to change the oil in a car and how to fix change a cylinder, or any special interest or vocational interest or spiritual interest people have. They can put together a book, and if it's no more than something for their descendants and for their friends, and or if they have what I think is a very helpful idea about how to live, I could maybe influence a lot of people.
Well, that's fantastic, and you're right. Amazon is a great place to go to get a book published. We're talking about CreateSpace, isn't that right, Dean?
Yeah, it was CreateSpace, mm-hmm. but they changed it to Kindle Direct now.
Oh, okay. And they still do So paperback versions of the books too?
Exactly the same thing that they were doing before, but for some internal reason, they brought it in. They changed the name and brought it into a little bit closer affiliation with Amazon.
I see.
But it was always on Amazon.
Well, we're on the subject, why don't you share a couple nuggets from your books with us?
Well, a couple of the pages that I picked out in the first one, which are biographical, so there's three different milestones. I started out with, there's a picture of me at age probably 10 or 11 with my mother and father, and I got my tongue stuck out at the photographer. And this project got underway in early winter of 1939. I moved in with two kind, well-meaning idiots. They taught me as they had been taught, some of which turned out to be very useful. Then, for some reason I could never understand, they turned me over to a state-run indoctrination center, public school. It was a 12-year sentence, but I got off 2 years for bad behavior. The last time I was in the dean's office was the first time we agreed on anything. He told my mother, as far as he was concerned, my education was complete. And then I go a few pages about going to the Navy and discovering Marcus Aurelius's Meditations. That book has been a big part of my life for since the around 60 or 62 or whenever I first came across it. I've read it and carried it all over the world with me. And every morning, I recently got into the habit of taking a sauna every morning, and I got the old book in there. It's not a book anymore. It's just a pile of pages. And I read out of Marcus Aurelius's Meditations all the time. And then this is 1983. Greenleaf Sterile Dye Corp. had become the largest manufacturer of dollhouse kits in the world, with 45 employees and $4.2 million in sales. I have to give a lot of credit to my first two wives and Napoleon Hill. Without their effort and his book, Think and Grow Rich, it never would have happened. Once again, Lady Fortune smiled on my busyness. The intelligent, motivated people that joined me in this endeavor managed all the day-to-day operations. This left me free to do trade shows, travel, study, exercise, meditate, and write. The other book, that Marcus Aurelius's Meditations and Think and Grow Rich, I received that book as a gift in the early 60s, and I read it and read it and reread it. When I got it, man, I was just broke. I mean, we were just barely we're living on $60 a week with a house and two kids, and my wife, of course. And that, after reading it over and over relentlessly, because I just felt I had to change. Oh, another part in the book, a scene that I think is worth reading, and this is right around the same time as Think and Grow Rich came along. A moment of insight. I was so sick with bronchitis that I had to sleep sitting up. During the night, I awoke and took a few tokes on the isomedihaler to relieve my asthma. Then I fired up a Winston. As I sat there coughing and thinking, I had this great breakthrough awareness. This shit doesn't work. If I keep up, and so started my 45-year quest for knowledge, understanding in a better way. And then I have a quote from Ayn Rand. Live to the limit of your knowledge and expand your knowledge to the limit of your life. So that was the point. And then came the 82 part where the business was a success. But I would say without that coincidental gift, I don't know where my life would be now, but I don't think it would have come out quite as good as it did. Or I don't know how it would have.
You talk about it as a coincidence. Do you believe there are coincidences in life, Dean?
I think that, I don't know.
Yeah. I don't either. Go ahead.
There's forces at work that I have no understanding of. There's coincidences that are unexplainable to me. And I don't know. And the older I get, the magnitude of my ignorance becomes clearer and clearer.
Well, I hear where you're coming from. I certainly don't buy it from the little bit that I know about you. But it reminds me of something that I read in one of your books. Let's see if I can find it. I really liked it. I had put a mark in there. I can't find it. Well, at any rate, I had asked you to pick out some of your favorites from your books. Why don't you share a couple of those with us now and then maybe a couple more later on.
Okay, here's a quick one from that book, I'll Fix My Head, the last one I was thinking about reading. This was in a journal when I was traveling around in a trailer. It's Pahrump, Nevada, 1697. It doesn't matter much where I am. It's which direction I'm headed. Which direction I'm heading will determine my destiny. Don't give back an inch. Stand your ground. This coming week will show me if my progress is real or just a self-delusion. I haven't missed a hobby show the Hobby Show of America trade show in 20 years, and it's starting tomorrow. Family, old friends, and a long track record of eating and drinking too much. It was, I was out in Nevada. The trade show was going to be in Las Vegas, and my son asked me if I'd please go there and help him man the booth. And it was like, it took so much, it turned me in a different direction. I did it well. I got through it fine, but I was really afraid of it. You know, I think in all these, having all these wonderful insights and experiences and meditating and exercising and doing yoga every day. And then I'm going to walk back into my old life. It scared me. So that was that with that book. The second book, Flowers in the Boneyard, is just an accumulation of poetry. I had for 500 days in a row, I have a short e-letter that I send out every day. And this is some of the ones I thought were a little better than the other ones. So this one is, I started out with, "You're standing too close. This shit ain't personal. Universal unfolding," parenthetically. "My shoulder hurts and my feet are swollen. I got toe fungus and an itchy colon. North Korea has been shooting missiles. The dog came home with a lot of thistles. Life is better than ever before. Garden greens and eggs from our hen. Electric heat, indoor plumbing, coffee, wine, and I can't wait back and watch the show. Be kind and gentle and stay in the flow. You're standing too close. This shit ain't personal." People take things so personal, you know, and it's just an unfolding of forces in motion. Every time we do something,
right,
we put some kind of force in motion. And quite often when we don't do things, we put forces in motion.
That's true. Very true.
Yeah.
And we have little awareness of the forces that we put into motion when we do that. It's kind of like the law of attraction that a lot of people talk about. That we do tend to attract whatever experiences that we are looking for, as long as we don't stay fixated to whatever the outcome might be. Just put forth those rockets of desire and see what happens.
Yeah, I agree. And the Hindus or the Buddhists call it karma. And I could see that force so clearly in my own life and in the lives of others. You know, they're just, and the direction can shift. I don't know, maybe the Buddha got enlightened and he couldn't shift direction. But I think for most people, you make progress, and then you start doing some stupid stuff. And all of a sudden you're going in the wrong direction. or you wimp out on something, you don't have that conversation with somebody that you should have. And you really start losing what you get, losing ground.
Well, what do you see as the cause of that? I have my own ideas. I'd be curious as to what you see as the reason for that.
I think it's a dynamic facility, like being fit. I can't run a 5-minute mile if I didn't run a 6-minute mile. You know, that it's a it's a building of resilience, a building of personal power, and an understanding of the laws of cause and effect. You do this. We're creating our future every second. And I have this line I like: be kind to my future self. That that goes when I'm looking for that third glass of wine. That it's not taking me in the direction I want to go.
I love that idea of being kind to your future self. I've never heard anybody propose something like that. That's wonderful.
Yeah, and it's has a whole variety of applications when you think about it. Because every time we allow ourselves to get angry or get depressed or to get – and I got to back up. That facility, the ability to not be angry and not be depressed and to smile when somebody's giving you a rough time is not just the self-training, but it has – we're physical beings. Our brains are chemical reactions, and if we're not being kind to our present selves with enough sleep and enough water, enough good clean water, and the right kind of food, and meditation and exercise. I mean, you have to exercise. You have to exercise every day, and some days a lot. If you want that fine, optimum edge of wholeness, of being, of really making the best of this deal, whatever it is. And that's so the psychological training comes in. But I swear, if somebody's drinking 7 or 8 Cokes a day and eating a couple bags of potato chips, that they can train all they want. They're going to hit a certain point and they're still going to be crazy.
True. Yeah. You've got to take care of your body every which way. I mean, not just the physical body, right?
Absolutely, because you can't optimize the situation if you don't. You ever read anything by Dr. Hyman? He's been doing brain scans, hundreds of thousands of brain scans, and he can look at somebody's scan and see what their problem is. Like for sports injuries and concussions and things like that, but there's a lot of ways to remediate that. When your brain is damaged or chemically enhanced with the wrong kind of chemicals, it's just out of your control. You're not going to be able to optimize wellness and wholeness and gratitude.
Well, I haven't heard of that doctor. What is his name?
I'll text you. His last name is Hyman. I can't remember his first name. He's been on all the interview shows. He's got his own podcast, and I read a couple of his books too. Doesn't come to mind right now, but I just listened to him and Tim Ferriss did a show recently, and it just invigorated me to realize that if I want an optimum experience of life, I have to have an optimum input, the best foods in moderation, just a balanced life, you know, as good as you can do it. And I'm really going to spend a lot of time in the garden this year because I think that the best way to eat well is to grow it yourself. Then you know what you're eating. Even you buy it from a farmer down the road, you don't know what he's doing for sure. It's so that's going to be, I think being in the sun and being out in the dirt digging is a very wholesome thing to do. And if some theories about your gut biome really flourishes just from getting your hands in the dirt and walking barefoot.
Well, I think that doing that, I mean, I enjoy gardening myself, and it just enhances my sense of well-being to be out there in nature and working in the garden, working with flowers, and I don't raise vegetables here, but I enjoy working in the flower garden, and I have lots of different beds, and it just really fills me with such a sense of well-being when I'm out there working in the dirt, as you say.
Yeah, my wife is a big on flowers. We have daffodils all over the property. We had somebody living here that was helping us for a while that planted daffodils. We have about 50 acres, and our house is in the middle of it. And they planted daffodils. It's not a big house. It's a small house in a small place, but it's nice to have all that property around. And him and his wife spread daffodils all over the property. So now I'm always surprised. It's just great.
It sounds like it's really got to be beautiful.
Yeah, it's always beautiful to me. When I was 12 years old, my grandfather was growing potatoes in these fields, and I have such nice memories of him. Right on the property, right where our house is built, I remember a conversation we had about 70, must have been at least 70 years, maybe 72 years ago. He was telling me that someday there's a maple grove on the property right near our house, and he was specifically grooming that for maple syrup because he had a sap bush down the road a little ways that he was selling. He used to sell 40, 50 gallons of maple syrup every year. So he says to me, well, someday this grove is going to produce a lot of, because he had weeded out everything except the maples, and we were cutting brush out of the edges. And he says, someday this is going to be all yours. You could be making, you probably get 100 gallons of maple syrup off this sap bush. Think of that, when sitting by the fire, it was probably 200 feet from where that scene took place, that the house was built much later, and there was no house on the property when he owned it.
Well, what a nice memory to I love hearing that. That's great.
Yeah, it's really, I come up that road. My mother's family moved to this valley in 1800. And when in the springtime like this, there's the original house is only, it's in the woods now. You can't even hardly find the foundation that they built. But the primrose come up every spring. And my wife and I went down there a couple times, and the guy that owns it now doesn't care. And we rustled some primrose and put them by our house. But they could have brought them from, they came from Rhode Island, the Norton family. And they brought those primrose with them. So that's one of the only living thing and remember in that was around and when they put their house up.
Well, would you care to share some more snippets from your books?
This is, how much time do we have left?
We have about 25 minutes, Dean.
Okay, this second book, The Flowers in the Boneyard, is all just poetry. I took it from the blog that I created. And there's a couple in here that I like. And I'll talk about that, pick it up in a minute. Master your form. When you're young, there's plenty of time to write a book or spin a great rhyme. But rhyming and writing is just not enough. You got to come up with some really good stuff. Read and travel, write a lot. Once in a while, you'll hit the right spot. The same with whatever else you do. Study, read, practice, and review. Get so good, they can't ignore you. And soon a following will start to accrue. And this one is, does this activity lead to where I want to be? No is the answer most of the time. All I do is sit around and rhyme. Today I'll make a great bold list of all the things that I have missed. And one by one, I'll cross them off. Then someday soon, I'll sit and scoff at all the wasted time I spent. I'll learn from it without lament. Oh, what a great thing I'll achieve, or just one more chance to self-deceive.
Ooh. That's a good one. Ah, well, I like the line about not lamenting. It doesn't serve any purpose, does it, to cry over spilt milk, so to speak?
Oh, it's a painful waste of time. I mean, we only got so many minutes. Spend any of them like that.
Yeah.
Create a raging curiosity. I used to think that I could know, but now I know it was just a show. Read and study, think and plan. Do it for a whole lifespan. And when you're old, you may realize that few among us are ever wise. The wisest thing that I can be so, you'll never know what you don't know. Create a raging curiosity.
That's a wonderful, wonderful idea. Raging curiosity. I love it.
And whenever I use a key thought that I got from somebody, I always give them credit. This one, when you get there, you find there's no gear there. Gertrude Stein said that. I always had some kind of plan, and all of a sudden, I'm an old man. It's always good to have something to do, some high vision to plan and pursue. But all we really have ever got is just this instant, just one shot. Ram Dass taught me, be here now. All future plans I will disavow. Be kind and helpful as I go, and know for sure I'll never know. And then the last book that I just, the most recent book that I just came out with, it was a concept that I learned a long time ago. I used to sell insurance in the early 60s, and the sales manager told me, whenever you're not doing anything except talking to a customer, say, do it now. Say it over and over again. Say it thousands of times a day. And I did that for a very short time, and it worked. My sales performance picked up, and then, like a lot of good resolutions, it just slipped away. So I was reading that Marcus Aurelius' Meditations, and one of the pages I had written, do it now on. And I started thinking, this is a couple years ago this happened. I started thinking about that period of time when I was using that do it now all the time. And I started to do that. And another thing that did for me, it made me realize and focus how much time I actually spend just drifting my head around in no particular place of any consequence at all, his past, future, something somebody said. So then over the last, about a year ago, I added the rest of it. Pick it up, put it back, write it down, do it now, say it over and over and over again. So yeah, how can you write a book about that? So I published a book because I think it's a good idea, and I tried to have one. It's the same as the other two books. It's really just one page. It's a bunch of pages put together. There's practically no continuity to it. But I approached that idea of pick it up, put it back, write it down, do it now, as in as many different angles as I could. And I also threw in quite a lot of my poetry to just get it up to 100 pages so I could call it a book. So I picked out some. The first page says, don't be put off by my style, or parenthetically, or lack of it. This is a big message. Pick it up, put it back, write it down, do it now. Pick it up, put it back, write it down, do it now. And then I go into a little bit of that history that I just gave you about how I got the idea. And then here's some of the pages I thought might give a flavor of what I'm doing here. Pick it up, put it back, write it down. Do it now. For the next few days, notice how much time your mind spends on idle head noise and daydreams, or worse, fear of some future event or anger about a past one. Life is just a little time running out. Pick it up, put it back, write it down, do it now. Over and over and over and over. Pick it up, put it back, write it down, do it now. That's one of my pages of encouragement.
I like that.
New beginnings are often described as painful endings. Lao Tzu, I don't know how you say that. This can be a new beginning. Pick it up, put it back, write it down, do it now. Most people will repeat this. Most people will not repeat this over and over and over and over. I make no guarantees to the small percentage of readers that will actually try this. I'm about 10 weeks away from the start of my 81st year here on the Pretty Blue Water Planet. This has been very helpful to me. Pick it up, put it back, write it down, do it now. Try it. And then there's another one here. Rick Hansen, in his really great book, The Biology of Belief, said that the neurons that fire together wire together. Pick it up, put it back, write it down, do it now. I will not walk past this mess on the closet floor aisle. Pick it up and put it back. Not tomorrow, not next week, when I'll have more time. I will do it now. As soon as I think of something that's important, I'll do it now. And if there's some really good reason I can't do it now, I'll write it down and do it later. Pick it up, put it back, write it down, do it now. And then there's a bunch of poems. And then another page comes up here. The most important thing in life is within our power to change, parenthetically, our attitude. Big message. It's not what's going on. It's how we choose to interpret and react. That creates our experience. Hello, bunch of lines, goodbye. I can't blame the cat, other people or the weather, but the way I react is my own creation. There is no one, there is no on and off switch. It takes training and effort to learn how to skillfully respond to the imperfect world. This can help. Pick it up, put it back, write it down, do it now, over and over and over. And it goes on like that. And it really has helped me and some friends of mine. This one lady that I know who's in her 60s, she said she started doing that, and she says she's much more organized. Her house is a lot cleaner than it's been in years. And I really love to, anybody that happens to take advantage of the free offer, go to my website, deanaroberts.com, and get all free books free in digital form. And I'd love to hear from you.
Such a generous offer. Go ahead, sorry.
I don't know if it's generous. I with some money, be nice. I'd like to sell something, but I don't need it. And I'd love to help people. And these books, I think, could help somebody if they take them with an open mind.
Well, I love your life philosophy, and I think that's a great mantra that you can put into action. And there's no time like now. I mean, now is all we really have.
That's it. Our life now.
Yeah.
I could read a couple more poems.
Sure, that would be great. And then we do have a caller on the line. We had another one, but we have one that's been with us since the beginning of the show, so we can take a call in a little while too.
Okay. This one was written on the 28,481st day of my life. Slow down the dying process to sleep. Look both ways before you leap. Staying healthy takes study and thought. It's worth the effort. Don't get distraught. Eat lots of veggies, nuts, and seeds. Be kind and gentle. Do good deeds. Drink spring water and exercise. Stay the course. Don't compromise. There's no way out. We're all dead meat. Sing and dance till your time's complete. Slow down the dying process. And this is knowledge, skills, and motivation are the greatest limits on choice. To learn some skills after lots of drills, but they don't apply to the things I try. Why? Because of the allure of the new and the search for what's true. A novice I'll stay until my last day. Ole. It wasn't so hot. You know, I read somewhere, I think Seth Godin said, if you want to write something good, write a lot of bad stuff. And every once in a while, that's what gave me the idea for the few flowers of wisdom mixed in with a lot of bullshit. That there's a lot of in here for sure. And some of it almost embarrasses me when I read it, you know. But then some of them I say, hey, wow, who was that guy?
Yeah, that's nice.
Let the mystery be simple joys and homespun pleasures. Love and kindness are the measures. A brief visit to a tiny spear, some laughs, some tears, we disappear. What's going on? Who can tell? Some say heaven, others say hell. Whichever it is, the best we can do is to be kind and loving until we're all through. Let the Mystery Be by Iris DeMint. That's a song by her, if you ever heard her work.
I have not.
Not the poem, but the name.
Hmm. Well, I love your life philosophies. They're great, and they're very simple, very down to earth. They all have to do.
They're impacted by the masters. You know, I read somewhere that we stand on the shoulders of 1,000 years of thought and writing, and I was influenced by Gurdjieff, Krishnamurti, Carlos Castaneda, Bhagwan Sri Rajneesh, and I've probably got 1,000 books on the shelves here that I've read pretty much all of them. And so I can't understand how people don't read. There's just so much interesting and helpful information available. And I've been an avid reader for years. My wife and I spend 1.5 to 2 hours every morning reading out of 4 or 5 books together. And it's new all the time. It's just so much to learn.
Do you do that together, or are you each have your own reading that you do?
No, I do all the reading. I read it to her mostly.
I see. Okay.
Yeah, and it's nice doing it with somebody else because you're open to discussion. You know, you get to a certain point, and you can get more clarity sometimes in just a minute by discussing a point. And we do quite often.
Well, you've got a lot of wonderful life philosophies, Dean. I really enjoy listening to you talk. Let's take a call, and then if we have time, we'll talk a little bit more before the show closes.
Sounds good. I recognize
this number. This is Deanna.
Hi, David.
Hi, Deanna. How are you?
I'm good. I'm enjoying the show. And also, hi, Dean.
Hello.
I've written a few things down. I pick it up, put it back. Write it down. Do it now.
Try it for
that's a good mantra. Like a good mantra. I find a lot of knowledge in what you wrote, and I liked very much what you wrote about. There's not that many wise people around. I can't see it because it's kind of dark here, but it's very good. I enjoyed it. I also looked at the houses, the Greenleaf dollhouses.
Oh, yeah?
And, very nice. Very, very nice. Something to do, especially at a time like this.
His business has been really busy. Yeah, it's amazing how, you know, that we used to make a lot of jigsaw puzzles for other people. And now I understand that most of the jigsaw puzzle manufacturers can't keep up with it. They're sold out. And
building a house is sort of like a jigsaw puzzle because these are models, right?
Yeah, they're all mostly one inch scale. There's some half inch scale houses there. But that's right, it's like a 3-dimensional puzzle because all those pieces fit together, but you have to glue them. So it's even a little bit more complex than just a jigsaw puzzle. But it's rewarding.
And then
go ahead.
No, and I said the parents and the kids that are there at home and get tired of watching TV during stay in can do this together. I think it's a great idea.
I did it with my grandson. We put the house, we put a couple houses together. We had a lot of fun.
I had fun listening to you.
Don't forget, you can get all three books for free. All you have to do is go to deanaroberts.com and you can download them.
I'll do that. I'll share one with you that I had on my Facebook from last year or a few years back, something that Ruth Bader Ginsburg said that she learned from her father-in-law as she started out in her marriage. And it said something like, reacting in anger or annoyance will not advance one's ability to persuade.
Well said, yeah. Anger or...
Anger or annoyance. You know, when you're teed off by something, something has frustrated you and you become very annoyed, it's not going to advance our ability to persuade and reason with the other.
I wrote it down. Thank you.
Well, thank you. Well, I wish you well, and what a lovely idea to have all that land surrounding you. And David, you know, the vegetable garden is not a bad idea right now.
No, you're right. Absolutely. I may have to give up some of my flower beds in order to put some vegetables in. I went crazy with the flowers, and then I thought, where am I going to put tomatoes? yeah. No, it's always nice to have your input, Deanna, and thank you very much for joining us tonight.
Well,
yes,
thank you very much for doing this, and bless you both. Oh, and the guy's name is Dr. Daniel Amen.
Daniel Amen, yes. I've read his
just like the
too.
Word amen, amen, you know, amen to that.
Yes.
Well, thank you, Deanna.
Hyman is somebody else, but I've read Daniel Amen's books too, and I think I'm mixing them up. Hyman is a different. Yes, Amen is the guy who does all the brain scans, right? Him and his wife have a podcast. So
I didn't know
you,
that.
Yeah, check
but
them
yeah,
on,
I know.
They're on Apple iTunes or whatever the Apple podcast is.
Apple is my favorite apple pie. Yeah, that's what I live with. And right now my battery is at 5%, so I don't want to get disconnected. I'll just say goodnight to both of you and go plug
all
the
right.
Thanks.
Sounds like a plan, Deanna. You take care. God bless you, hon.
God bless you both.
Thank you. Well, Dean, we've got about 5 minutes left. Is there anything in particular you'd like to talk about before we come to the end of the show?
I would be interested in some sort of a mentoring relationship with somebody that is really committed to finding their way in self-management. Because I look at the whole project of self-evolution as learning the skills, learning how to manage your life and your responses. Like still at 80, if I don't consciously pay attention, I will gulp down what I'm eating. And just the skill like chewing, it takes technique and real motivation to try to manage all of these different aspects of life. Breathing. My wife and I are just reading this book now called The Oxygen Advantage. For the second time, the author is Patrick McGowan, and it's a very different way of looking at breathing. And he's talking about the last few pages we're reading this morning about mouth breathing and how absolutely destructive and unhealthy it is. And I've been a mouth breather my whole life, and I'm just realizing that it's going to be quite a job. And I wake up every morning, I feel like death warmed over, and my mouth is like a saddle. So it's obviously unhealthy, and I've never really addressed it before. So something as simple and as personal and as close to and as with such a possibly profound health, because he's talking about everything from tooth cavities to the bio in your mouth, all of the different bacteria and everything in your living in your mouth, how incredibly unhealthy it is to be a mouth breather. And I never thought of any of that. I've been thinking about wellness and health for 40 years. So there's always there's always some new challenge and new management skill that you have to, if you want to optimize this situation of being on a planet Earth, you have to face, deal with, create a system for, like he suggested the first time we read the book, you buy these things that you put over your mouth at night when you go to bed. It's like a big Band-Aid that covers your mouth. And I bought them, but I never tried it. So on this second reading, I don't think tonight, but soon I'm going to, he says, wear them during the daytime for a while. So you really get used to breathing through your nose and then try to sleep with it. And it's a simple thing that you wouldn't think of, but it's part of the picture of self-management.
Huh. I wondered how it was that you would train yourself to not breathe through your mouth at night. I'm a mouth breather too, and I have sleep apnea, so I have to wear one of those masks, but that still does not prevent me from breathing through my mouth. It just means that it's forcing the oxygen down there. That's fascinating. There's something you wear that forces you to breathe through your nose.
Well, it's like a Band-Aid. You basically tape it.
A Band-Aid, huh? Okay.
It's sold specifically for that, so you know it's not going to tear your lips off.
Okay. All right.
If you're interested in that book, David, I'll send it to you when we finish it.
Okay, that sounds great. Well, we've come to the end of the hour, so I'm going to wish you well, and I thank you so much for joining me tonight, Dean. It's been a pleasure.
Yes, let's stay in touch, David. I'd like to, I remember years ago you came down to the store one time. It'd be nice to keep in touch.
Yes, I agree. Thank you. Thank you for that sentiment. I appreciate it. Well, with that said, let's come to a close. Go ahead. You were going to say something?
Yeah, DeanARoberts.com. Get a free copy of my three books.
Good. I'm glad that you mentioned that.
Bye, Dave.
All right, let's take it. Okay, you take care, Dean.
Right.
Let's take a moment to pause and reflect upon the idea that we're all united through the diverse tapestry of our individual gifts. There is no real thing as separation except in our own minds. We are each unique expressions of the ultimate source of our beings. We are spiritual beings having a human experience who can and will have a spiritual experience when we let it be. Have a great week, and remember, whatever you dream, you can realize. Stay well and stay healthy, everybody. Good night, and God bless.
Good night, David.